Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Something funny?
No, it's a long story.
Longer than 50 minutes?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 7, Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And now here are your hosts, Tara Noviano and Adam Twelvesworth.
Oh, your last time to butcher a name. Good job, Dave. Aww, welcome back,
thanks,
Adam.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you. Happy to be here. We miss you, Sarah. Come back soon.
Sarah will be back soon. And we also want to tell you, in addition to that, there is no Again With this Friday because January has five Fridays and you know how that goes. But next Friday.
Has five what?
January has five Fridays.
Okay.
What did I say?
Something else.
Oh, that's what I meant. Fridays. This is the fifth podcast we've taped today. So my mouth does not necessarily linked up to my brain anymore.
Oh,
we'll find out.
That's a feeling I know well.
Has five froyos, just like Mitch Leary. Never
Speaking
get over
of,
it.
Have you seen my ice cream cone? Anyway, next Friday, February 6th, we will be back with something great. TBD when Sarah returns, and we will welcome her back next week. But for more information on everything we're doing, again with this podcast.com. And if you want to get in the Patreon, again with this podcast.com/club. We just did a special Again With Them event where Dave was titrating out the 90210 MG episodes one at a time so that he did not actually melt his brain. So if you join at the $5 level, you can hear all of those.
Thank you for your service and for not making me do it.
That's exactly what happened. Adam said before we even asked.
Eight of them.
No,
you didn't even tell
you.
Me there were eight of them.
There were eight.
Jesus.
I mean, two of them are kind of short. But anyway, Still. This is all the information you'll get if you join us at the $5 level and up on Patreon. Again, with this podcast.com/club. Okay. Let us actually get into this episode, starting with our C plot. Pacey gets further ensnared in Danny and Karen's whole deal. So when we first see Pacey, he is at the restaurant as Danny stands over him at a stove. Exposition comes fast and furious. The restaurant is having an anniversary celebration with 300 guests. I don't think that place holds 300 people, but go off. So Pacey has hours left to perfect the duck mushroom crepes he's working on. Sounds awful. Sounds real fatty and mushy and gray.
I would eat it, but not if Pacey made it.
Fair. Karen enters and tells Danny that Rob called to update them on the white asparagus delivery and to congratulate Danny, kicking off a bunch of boring banter between Danny and Karen about the era when Danny was regularly sleeping in the restaurant so that he could be present for the produce delivery that Rob sent and make sure that Rob was not sending wilted lettuce. Clip two.
So you're actually the second chef here.
Yep. They hired me after the first one's coke habit became a bit too habitual.
We really used to live here.
For months at a time.
That has got to be hell on a marriage. Hey, speaking of, is Emily going to be here tomorrow?
No, she can't make it.
They look so guilty at this. Like, they might as well be wearing signs. Like, we are having an affair. Don't do that if you're not going to be good at it, is my opinion.
Also, I know nobody cares, but does he not own the restaurant? This whole time, I thought it was his restaurant.
Yeah, I don't know.
It makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. Later, Karen tries to chit-chat with Paisley as he works. No, he's not bringing a date to the party. Yes, Melanie is still around. Remember her, Jennifer Morrison, but she is in law school, so her schedule can be crazy. No, Paisley does not want Karen to set him up with one of her hot friends. And when Karen asks why Paisley is in such a bad mood, he just snits that he's fed up. But Karen doesn't take the hint and asks him why. And he really does try to spare her, but when she insists, we get this. Clip 3.
Okay. You know that boyfriend of yours? The one I've been hearing so much about? He wouldn't by any chance be coming tomorrow night, would he?
No, not exactly.
You see, now here it's been months, and I've never actually seen the guy. How is that possible?
Well, it's like I said, he's got a really crazy schedule.
And when he's not standing you up, does he ever take you anyplace special? Like, I don't know, maybe Boston Harbor, a gigantic sailboat?
So what, he told you?
No, he didn't tell me. It's my boat. All this time you've been complaining to me about your boyfriend, and here I've been stupid enough to actually have sympathy for you.
I asked you to have sympathy for me.
You didn't ask me to have sympathy. And believe me, I've been trying not to.
So what, you're just gonna lay your little guilt trip on me now? You don't know anything about my life, Paisley.
What I know is that this relationship is gonna bring you nothing but grief. And I also know that I had to look his wife in the eyes and lie for you. Believe me, that was not too enjoyable.
Yeah, well, you know, in the real world, sometimes people actually have to do things that are not so enjoyable and accept things that are a little less than perfect and compromise for reasons that sometimes people are too immature to comprehend, in which case they should just stay the hell out of it.
This is so exhausting. I know that there was good reasons for Paisley to not also be in a school in the Boston area. Like, everything that happened in his senior year of high school did not make sense for him to get let in on a pity acceptance. But fast-tracking the grown-up storylines like Melrose Place is also not working, and this is so clumsy.
I really wondered, for the first time this episode, how old she's supposed to be.
Right.
And, like, establish that he likes older women. Mm-hmm. Not just Tamara, but Jennifer Morrison.
Sure.
But yeah, he is 18. Mm-hmm. It's weird. This whole arc is weird and I don't like it.
Yeah. She's also being pretty defensive about something she's trying to make him agree is fine, you know?
Yeah. Also, I thought she wanted to be a chef. Like, she wanted his job, but now she seems to just like that. The affair was sort of added in like 3 episodes into the season out of nowhere. Yeah.
Yeah, the chef thing would have made more sense to pursue. And that the issue is like Danny is sexist and he just wants another protege that's like himself.
Right.
But, you know.
But there has to be an obstacle to Paisley wanting to be with her. Like, sure. I get it. It just feels poorly thought out.
I agree. So when Paisley gets back to the marina, Karen is waiting next to his boat to apologize. He nicely says he was not so charming either, but Karen says that Paisley was put in the middle of something which was not fair, and that when he called her on it, she was defensive, like I said, and judgmental, and that wasn't fair either. Besides which, Karen doesn't really know anything about Paisley's life. Paisley could say the same about her. She laughs that there's not much to know. He tries to get her to talk about herself, but fails. Clip 4.
You remind me of him.
I remind you of a guy who could cheat on his wife?
Stop. And when we got together, it wasn't exactly cheating. Emily had walked out on him. She felt that he spent too much time at the restaurant, and she was right. But what she didn't understand was that without him, civilization would have folded in 6 months.
Okay, did you also think she was just being hyperbolic and then realize civilization is the name of the restaurant? So stupid.
It all sort of clicked at the same time because their chef uniforms have a little, like, the top of a column.
Yes.
On them, which I hadn't really thought about. But then, no. Like she said, and I was like, oh, sure.
I hadn't either, but it made me so mad. So
but it
dumb.
Also, I mean, not to keep saying things don't make any sense, but, like, they're clearly using the same set for every restaurant in the show, right? They just change the lamps out on the tables, right? But, like, if that's your thing and that's your logo, wouldn't you style the restaurant, like, not to look like a Greek ruin or whatever, but, like,
right.
To not have, like, IKEA lamps on the tables. Like, right. It's so, I don't like it.
No, it's very, like, late 90s, the style of the restaurant. Like, it looks like an internet cafe with all of the lit up, you know, the neon stuff and the asymmetrical triangle styling and stuff. No, you're totally right.
Yeah, and in the I didn't say this last week, but the dinner scene with Audrey's mom, there are different stupid lamps on the tables. Yeah. that also I don't believe would be in a restaurant, like on the table like that, even in 2001.
No. Pacey and Karen go on clip 5.
Danny just has this kind of infectious idealism, this belief that things can work out. I think that's what he sees in you.
Cool. I don't, okay. I mean, I guess it's a compliment if it's coming from her or she intends it as one since she loves Danny, but whatever. This doesn't make him seem very interesting. So Pacey invites Karen in slash aboard, and although she declines, the energy between them is charged as she apparently realizes that Pacey is the version of Danny that she could fuck and feel less guilty about it, perhaps, but doesn't go anywhere yet. And then it's the party. Everyone is still setting up as Danny in a tuxedo, apologizes to Pacey for making him stay in the kitchen all night like his evil stepmother, which, like, Pacey, I assume, has the least seniority in the joint, so I think it's fine if he's working.
Lots of people are in the kitchen. It's their job. Right. I feel like Danny should be in the kitchen.
I agree. It would give him more authenticity to come out like in his chef whites and stuff, you know, show this is what I'm doing with your, I assume, investor's money or whoever is coming. Anyway, that's when Karen shows up in a clingy dress and red lipstick, and Danny and Pacey are both dumbstruck by her party look, but only Danny actually runs up to her, joking about how glad he is to have hired her and dancing her around and dipping her until Pacey spots. Clip 6.
Hey, Emily.
Hi, Pacey. Still burning the crepes?
Yeah, it's hard to get a hand in here. You know everybody's always goofing around.
Hey, I thought you weren't coming.
So did I. It's kind of hard to celebrate the success of the restaurant that almost ruined your marriage.
Yeah, I imagine that would kind of suck.
Dance with me.
Anytime.
You okay?
Yeah, sure, fine. What do you care? You probably called her.
But you know that's not true.
Do I?
Karen, I know that you thought tonight was going to be your date with Destiny, but I'm just trying to be a friend to you, okay?
Is that what you think I need as a friend?
Yeah. Because you obviously don't have too many of them. They would have already told you how badly this is going to end for you, for him, for everybody. They would have told you that things like this just...
Told me what, Pacey? That married men don't leave their wives for waitresses they're sleeping with? Yeah. Thanks for the newsflash.
Yeah, ask Jennifer Mancini. She could have told you that. But also, like, rude about her friends. How does he know all of her hot friends aren't also sleeping with married men? They're in their 20s.
And why is Karen at this party if she's not working it? That right. Feels wildly inappropriate.
Well,
like, some of the staff gets to be a guest and some of them has to work it.
She thought Emily wasn't coming, so that's their chance to have a date in out in the open, again, being bad at having an affair.
Right, where all of your coworkers can see you. It just, are other wait staff there as guests? This is the wrong thing to focus on, I realize, but it bothered me.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that everyone knows. Everyone in the restaurant knows.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether they have let on or not, everyone knows. So when Pacey comes out of the kitchen in his party clothes-ish, he quickly scans from Danny dancing with Emily to Karen moping alone at the bar. And as he's still standing there, we see a cater waiter carry a tray full of food into the kitchen, which seems like bad direction that coming out to the guests normally. Pacey then goes straight to Karen, who is still hostile to him. When he was running his mouth before, he says he forgot to tell her that she looks amazing. And Karen asks if he ever wishes he were someone else. Sure, he says, Harrison Ford in Raiders of the Lost Ark, but she doesn't mean anyone specific, just someone totally different from who he is. So we get this, clip 7.
Well, hi, I'm Scott.
That's not so different. He should be named Scott. He looks more like a Scott than a Pacey. Pacey is not a real name.
Well, yeah, no one looks like a Pacey because
no.
That's ridiculous.
Right. So they go on, clip 8.
And you are?
I'm Marie. Nice to meet you, Scott.
It's nice to meet you too, Marie. You are, without a doubt, the single most jaw-droppingly beautiful woman in this room. And I was wondering if you would honor me with a dance. What's up, Marie? Where are you from?
Stop it, Pacey.
Pacey? Who's this Pacey? I have a funny feeling I should be insulted.
How can he... I mean, how can he just...
You know what, just calm down, Karen.
need to go talk to him.
I think that would be a really bad idea.
I don't care.
Karen, what would you say to him? Seriously, what would you say?
And apparently she doesn't have any ideas because that's the end of the scene. But, I mean, truly, what are you going to do? Like, go blow up his life in front of his wife? It's not going to end well for
him. And all of your coworkers?
Yes. And the investors, presumably. Anyway, right. Then we see Pacey in a foyer that is painted proppy red. He is knocking on a stage left French door. So we're all expecting Doug to answer because this is exactly what it looks like in his place.
Clearly the same set.
I'm glad you clocked that as well.
Yeah.
But just for today, this is Karen's apartment. Pacey brought a sample platter of the party menu since he didn't see her eating much. She lets him in, thanking him for all his recent services to her, including not saying he told her so. And he says he did tell her so and has no problem saying it. And she complains that Danny kissed Emily right in front of her. Pacey points out that public kissing is one of the benefits of marriage. Karen briskly says she has to break it off with Danny since he is obviously not going to leave Emily and they're not going anywhere. And she is just another woman, although she says female, I will not, with a destructive dating pattern. Pacey tells her to change it. Then she asks if she's supposed to date him. Pacey makes a face so that she distractedly shoots him a sorry. And he laughs at her to just eat. But when she goes to get plates, her phone rings and her answering machine, it's the past, picks up. Clip 9.
Hey, it's me. So you left? I can't say I blame you. God, what a mess, Karen. I'm so sorry you had to go through that, Mike. My life is so complicated right now, and I'm sorry that you're stuck in the middle of it. I know that that means practically nothing to you, and I know that you just want to punch me in the face, and you have every right to, but I love you, Karen. I really do, in ways big and small, and I never wanted you to get hurt. Please, Karen, if you're there, pick up, please. I want to talk. I just want to know you're all right.
The way he's muttering, it's like, is Emily in the room while you're on the phone? Like, everything he's saying is so cliched. I just wonder if people who are actually having affairs ever stop and are like, oh my God, I'm like every loser having an affair in a movie because this is just all so rote.
But Tara, he loves her in ways big and small.
Yeah, good for her and him, I guess. But yes, what you can't hear in the clip is Pacey realizing that Danny's whole speech is actually working on Karen and letting himself out as she goes to pick up the phone. And that's where we leave it with these three or four, I guess, if you count Emily, even though only Pacey does, I guess. So we probably shouldn't either. Moving on to the B plot, Audrey's real world audition tape has academic value for Joey. Joey is studying on her bed when Audrey gets back to the room, aggressively ankling a freshman named George. After she slams the door on him, she asks why Joey's film geek looks like Tom Cruise, citation needed,
nope.
And hers looks like the kid from 16 Candles who didn't want to go to the dance. I guess is Farmer Ted. It's been a while since I saw that.
I guess I did look this kid up and he has a very generic name, so it's possible IMDb is wrong, but most of his credits are as a dancer. He was in Showgirls and he toured with Madonna.
All right. Good for George.
Yeah. So kind of hot, George. What are you doing, Audrey?
George, get over to Stumble. They need tumblers. Audrey had to talk to this nerd so that she could borrow his camera to tape her audition for The Real World Ibiza. And asks Joey if she should go vamp, vixen, or full-on slut. They don't settle that because the show then has to remind us about Joey's gig with Professor Wilder, cataloging the archives of not Dorothy Parker, Rose Lazar. Joey's trying to get up to speed, but the existing scholarship is impenetrable, and she feels like an idiot around the pretentious upperclassmen. And I feel like if you feel like an idiot, step aside and let someone do this who knows what they are doing, because this is not a job for you or for any freshman or for any undergrad.
And we don't want to watch it.
It's fucking boring. And no one cared to put any thought into how they were actually going to stage it, which we'll get to. Anyway, Audrey doesn't care about the material and dives into Joey's closet to find her something to wear. Clip 10.
Audrey, I really don't think anyone's going to be noticing what I'm wearing.
they're not. But leaving aside the whole don't fuck your students thing, which, as we have discussed at length, was not something the teen shows were that worried about back then. We have been told that Wilder is married with kids. Like, find a grad student if you're that horny for someone to talk at you about Lacan. But anyway, Audrey drops two garments on the bed, one of which is a stretchy spaghetti strap camisole in the is it underwear style of the era, because of course she does. And then we're at the meeting, which I guess is more of a seminar. Everyone is being insufferable, including Wilder, who has a chalkboard coffee table on which some papers are resting, surrounded by drinks. So I really hope these are not originals. And if they're not, I don't know what we are doing. Like, I don't understand what the project is.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. Why is that table? You guys talked about this a couple episodes ago. Why is that his furniture? Mm-hmm. Like, it just, none of it makes any sense.
No. So one girl named Cassandra is convinced that the letters they're reading are evidence of a lesbian affair, clip 11.
You know, Alan, just because a teenage girl happens to appreciate the lyric poetry of the ancient world's most famous lesbian doesn't necessarily mean she wants to sleep with other teenage girls.
Yeah, but Rose did. As literary sluts go, she was right up there with Edna St. Vincent Millay and Inês Nin.
Oh, God. This is why, if I had to choose one to do over, it would be high school over college. Like, I could not take it. All the people trying to outsmart each other. Shut up. Anyway, Joey is sitting there like a bump on a log, so Wilder has to address her specifically to find out what she thinks. And she leads off with her usual confidence and poise. Clip 12.
Well, for starters, they're interesting. And this may sound like a stupid question, but who's IV?
That is a far from stupid question. In fact, that is the question. IV. I period V period. The person to whom all these letters are written could be anybody.
She never uses a full name?
Not within the letters themselves.
What about the envelopes?
She could have destroyed them, thinking that the letters were still inside, or they all possibly may be in a shoebox stuffed under a bed in New Jersey.
So essentially what you're saying is we have absolutely no idea who these letters were written to.
None. All that we know are that these are the most intimate, most revealing letters of her career. For the first time in these letters, we catch a glimpse of somebody who is real. Somebody who doubts themselves. Somebody who is not afraid of looking stupid while asking essential questions about life. And Rose obviously wrote them to somebody that she cared a lot about. Other than that, we know nothing.
So it's a mystery. Cool. Like Derrida's postcard for real. Don't you think, Joey?
I probably would if I had any idea who you were talking about.
All of you, fuck off, first of all. But B, again, to repeat myself, like if Joey really doesn't know who Derrida is, she is wasting everyone else's time being in this apparently class. Because, again, I don't understand what this is. But whatever it is, Wilder decides to end the session on Joey's ignorance, telling everyone to come to the next meeting with ideas on who the mystery person could be. Sounds pointless. Like, if there's no way to verify it, why? This is not how cataloging works. Why any of this?
Are they getting credit? I don't know who Derrida is either, but I also don't care.
Right. Well, you weren't an English teacher. I mean, you weren't an English major anyway.
Yes, I was.
Sorry. Well, he's a literary theorist.
Yeah, I also have Google, so, you know, sure. I figured it out. But yeah, I just, why is any of this happening? Why are we being made to watch it? It's a teen soap. Get back to the teen soaping.
I mean, I sort of want them to, but I also feel like they're heading towards Joey and Wilder fucking, so I don't, but we'll find out, I guess. And the next day, Joey's...
Solid point.
The next day, Joey's walking with Wilder on campus when he tells her that she seems bored by the Rose Lazar project. She would not say that, but he points out that she did imply that the letters she had read before the IV batch were not interesting. She says the other ones have been stiff, like Rose thought someone would be grading her. And Wilder inappropriately flirts that someone could be at ease with someone who is grading them. And Joey says they shouldn't be, which is true. And Wilder tries again, asking if Rose Lazar could have written the letters to a teacher or a mentor. And she would have been 18 or 19 when she wrote them, just like another situation close to home for Joey right now. Joey thinks they were written to a friend. Clip 13.
Assisted, if they were love letters, wouldn't she be...
What? Be more obvious about it? Not if she was writing to another woman back in the 20s.
No, that's not what I meant. I mean, if they were love letters, wouldn't she be less honest?
There's a paradox in there somewhere.
I read all of them last night, and Rose totally pours her heart out into these letters. And who is that honest with someone they're sexually attracted to? I mean, people can be friends, right? Best friends, but the second sexual attraction comes into it, it's like all bets are off as far as honesty is concerned.
So you don't think people can be both friends and lovers?
No, I do. I hope I do, but not at 18.
Well, then I think you better concentrate on this friend angle.
You know, I would, but to be honest, I don't have the same background as everybody else. I don't even know where to start.
Yeah, because Audrey's right, and he only brought you in because he wants a pretext to spend more time with you, idiot. Whatever. Wilder leads her to the assumption that Ivy was probably a friend that Rose Lazar made at Worthington, and if Rose Lazar was 18 or 19 and thus a student, would she need to write letters to a fellow student or just see them in person? But whatever. Clip 14.
Why are you helping me?
Let's just say I like underdogs.
Don't make me make an under joke. I don't want to. Aww. I really don't. I mean, I guess I did. When we see Joey next, she is at the library, but then when she gets to the shelf with the Worthington yearbook that she's looking for, she sees through the shelf that Cassandra is already there looking at it, and they share their theories, Cassandra ruling out Rose Lazar's roommate as a possible IV on the grounds that Rose had called her small-minded in a letter to someone else, but she says pursuing a college friend was a good idea. She's glad they both had it. Joey looks a little guilty about that, but she does not say it was Wilder's idea. And then Cassandra adds that this project is all just an excuse to spend more time with Wilder, and Joey has no response to that either. And like, okay, I don't think they've figured out what they're doing with this guy yet. I think Ken Marino is hot, but as an older person, like, he doesn't seem like such a dreamboat that they would all be this horny for him.
Well, he's just written so gross.
Yes, like, he is.
Both that he's clearly trying to fuck all his students, but also he's just such a blowhard. Like, yeah. This is the least I've ever enjoyed a Ken Marino character, and he's played some real sickos.
He really has.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Sometime later, Audrey is screening audition video options for Joey, who impatiently says she has to go. Audrey makes her wait for just one more. In this one, Audrey is looking straight down the camera in a black turtleneck and saying this, clip 15.
Oh, great birthday present, right? I mean, what 14-year-old wants to fend for themselves like an adult? Like, but I have to forgive her. I know that. Because forgiving her is the only way that I'm ever going to be good to anyone else. The part that's just really terrifying is that I think that I'm actually, I don't know, I'm like turning into her. I'm loud and shameless and I'm bossy and I freak people out sometimes. But I don't think that I can change that. Because even if I don't particularly like who I am, at least I know who that is. Even if I tried to change, the hell knows who I'd be.
What? What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong. That's great. That's it. That is...
That's the one. But I'm just sitting there talking to myself.
Exactly.
But isn't it kind of cheesy and vulnerable?
No, it's you. It's the real you. I mean, that girl in the video who's not afraid to look stupid, that's the real you.
It's not, but it'll probably get Audrey cast. So she's right. And on her way out, Joey adds that she has met Kay and Audrey is nothing like her. I mean, they're both fabulous bitch queens, so I don't know about nothing, but I take Joey's point. It's what she wants to hear. So Joey gets to a meeting a little late, but she's all fired up and she's just in time for Cassandra's theory that since the IV letters are mostly about writing, Rose Lazar must have written them to another writer because who else would care? But Joey thinks Rose Lazar wrote them to herself as a kind of diary because there are no envelopes and because unlike the other letters, there isn't any mention of current events or what's going on in her life. The only person that she was brave enough to share her real insecurities with was herself. And speaking of insecurities, clip 16.
Am I a total idiot?
Well, no one can know. There's no way to verify this. But Wilder thinks everyone is silent because they're asking themselves why they didn't think of that. Which is a nice interpretation. And yeah, again, the literary mystery, like, who cares? Who cares about this fictional writer? We haven't even read anything she's written. Who cares?
And I could imagine like a different show where we care about what Joey is experiencing, but I don't. And
no.
All these other characters are barely people. Mm-hmm. I'm so impressed that you know Cassandra's name. I didn't until just now.
Only because I looked it up on IMDb.
Fair. But yeah, like it just doesn't fit in this show in any way. And I actually don't know why Joey cares either. Like it just feels so off model for her.
Yeah.
Since she claims not to want to fuck Ken Marino.
Right. Well, it's not clear if she doesn't want to or she just didn't think it's a possibility, I guess.
Sure.
Anyway, later, Joey's the last one at Wilder's giant empty house, which is dangerous, but also where is his alleged family, the wife and kids that we heard about, as he informs her about Kafka writing Felice that writing letters is like communicating with ghosts, including your own. And when Joey asks, he says that Felice was Kafka's on and off fiance. By the way, you can see this in the visual aids. The walls in wherever they are, whatever room they're in, the living room, are also that same poppy red from the foyer. So again, it's the same location that they're just reusing yet again.
Well, that apartment is so clearly not an apartment. Like this bothered me when it was Doug's apartment too.
Yes.
Like those French doors, that's not
a front
exterior door to anything. Yeah.
No, definitely not. Anyway.
Like it's just a house, yeah.
Yes. So Joey asks if Wilder thinks that she was actually right about Rose Lazar's letter, and he says she had the best idea he has heard so far, which stands to reason since she's a freshman and hasn't been encoded by the department's received ideas yet. Joey guesses that means she's too stupid to know any better, but he means she's open-minded. When most people get to college, they feel really insecure relative to everyone around them, so they race to try to catch up and pretend to know things instead of slowing down to learn them. They don't realize the discomfort of uncertainty is the most precious part of the experience. If you can feel comfortable not knowing, you can learn anything. And if not, you have stopped before you've begun. Clip 17.
When for a while I was feeling insecure.
No.
And I just... I guess what I'm saying is... thanks for choosing me to be on this project.
Thank you for sticking with it.
Stop talking about sticking! It's not over. Clip 18.
Can I ask you one more stupid question?
Shoot.
Who the hell is Derrida, anyway?
Well, let's just say if literature were the Star Wars universe, he would be like the Darth Maul.
God.
It's not an answer.
No!
Like, even if it's an accurate analogy, which
not
I doubt
really.
It is. It's just like that does not answer her question. She doesn't know who he is.
No, shut up.
Yeah.
But at least that's the end of her time with Wilder for this episode. And that night in their beds, Audrey asks Joey if she really got the big Rose Lazar idea because of Audrey's tape. Joey says she did. Audrey asks if Wilder was impressed and Joey dodges the question. Joey really doesn't care that she obviously impressed him and he thinks that she's special. Audrey asks. Joey says she doesn't care at all, but after Audrey has shut up, she smiles a little to herself, and I am disgusted again. Stop it.
I was disgusted by Joey sleeping on a decorative pillow
mm.
that looks so scratchy.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Who knows? On to the A-plot. Dawson actually deals with his problems for real. After panning down the front of a building with a pointed yet also small and apologetic American flag in one window, we find out we are outside Dr. Weir's office. Jen and Dawson are on a bench with coffee. She checks again that he's not going to chicken out again, and he says definitely not. He might ditch, which is different. Jen assures him that therapy is not so bad. Dawson is dubious that telling a stranger his greatest fears is going to help him, and Jen says it might not. Not even Freud typically expected to convert hysterical misery into everyday unhappiness. And again, college. She just learned this in her psych class last week. She's got to tell him. Naturally, this segues into talk of penis envy and libido because, God forbid, even one episode of this show fail to enrage the Parents Television Council. Jen adds that most people would benefit from time on the couch, though when Dawson asks, she admits she only actually lay down on Tom's couch once because, like all the seating in his office, it was very uncomfortable. Nice callback. It definitely looked it. She predicts that Dr. Weir will be a warm spider plant in the window kind of chick. Dawson can't believe Jen never felt ridiculous rambling on about her problems to a total stranger, as though everyone in the world doesn't already have to know how he's feeling every second he's alive. But Jen says she felt no more ridiculous doing that than she does rambling on to no one during the radio show she suddenly has. I guess that's how we're learning that she does. Dawson tells her he listens, and she says it's just him and Grams. Dawson sincerely thanks Jen, and then I guess they were slow because we have to spend 10 seconds of screen time on Dawson smiling at Jen before the credits start. And then in Dr. Weir's office, Dawson smiles to see that Jen was right about the spider plant, and Dr. Weir enters just then asking if something is funny, and in fact, it is! Sidebar on Polly Perrette, because that's who is playing Dr. Weir as a blonde, which feels wrong after she was on 7 million seasons of NCIS with black, fake black hair.
Her whole look is something in this.
She's almost unrecognizable, especially with the glasses on. So Polly Perrette in real life claims that she was fired from NCIS after Mark Harmon's dog bit a crew member, and that when Perrette intervened on the crew member's behalf, Harmon physically assaulted her, and not for the first time. And I believe women, but she's also seemed like kind of a loose cannon. And I will link to her most infamous tweet about a child with 666 on its forehead that she then drew. So, okay. And obviously not to say that just because Mark Harmon has a reputation as a nice guy, he is one. CBS has had a rash of abusive showrunners on its procedural shows who tended to get fired in the late 10s and early 20s. So there might be a fish rots from the head argument to be made. But all of that said, Perrette seems like she has a very special mind. And I will leave it there. But you experienced one of her other sidelines of business.
I will say one positive thing about her, which is highly tangential to her. She owned a bakery in New York City called Donna Bell's Bake Shop on 49th and 8th that was so fucking good. I guess Donna Bell was her mom. I mean, I never saw her in it.
Yeah.
They were right down the street from the stage door at New World Stages. And once a year, my company hosts an event there and we have these crazy early morning calls. And they had just like the best breakfast sandwich I've ever had in my life.
Ooh.
And so it was like we would all get one when we had to show up at work at 7 a.m., which... Mm-hmm. Please don't ever make me do that again. And they closed in 2020. And every time I walk by, it's like a Just Salad now. And I just get sad. And then I remember that it was owned by Polly Perrette. And I laugh a little because she seems like a ridiculous human.
She does.
Such a good biscuit, though.
I'm really glad that she at least has that on her resume. That's something to hang your hat on. Back to the scene. Dr. Weir asked Dawson what was funny. Dawson motions to the plant as he tells Dr. Weir he and his friend were trying to predict what she would be like. She says she used to have artificial plants, but that they made patients nervous because they didn't know if they could trust a therapist who couldn't keep a plant alive. She asks what else Dawson expected, and when he says what anyone expects, she proves she's done at least a little research on him by mentioning movie shrinks. Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting, Judd Hirsch in A Big Sweater, Inordinary People, though she doesn't name it. And Dawson asks if they can start over. He wants to do this right, but Dr. Weir says he is. He guesses she knows why he's there, but she wants to hear it from him. And by the way, please know that while they're having this exchange, she is faintly smiling in a way that I find inappropriate and off-putting, but is maybe normal. You can see it in the visual aids. She's like completely bland expression that doesn't seem like she's engaged with anything he's saying at all.
She's also like her makeup. It's just so much look for a human, let alone a therapist and like a young therapist. So like maybe, I don't know, she's like going for something. It's weird. Everything about her is weird.
Yeah. So Dawson has been having panic attacks, which he says he knows are his way of dealing with Mitch's death. Clip 19.
And you're sure about that?
Well, I mean, nothing else is really all that different about my life right now.
Nothing else?
I guess it's not really true, is it?
Did it feel true?
Well, 6 months ago, this is not what I thought I'd be doing with my life.
What are you doing?
Nothing. I mean, I'm helping my mom, I guess.
And you're not in school?
No, I was at the USC.
It's a good school. It's far away.
Yeah. I'm thinking about going back. I mean, not now, obviously. I mean, my mom still needs me. I've got a baby sister who's not even one.
But next semester, maybe?
Yeah, I've been meaning to call them and find out about that.
Is this something that you want to do?
I don't know. Maybe that's what's wrong with me. I don't really do anything. It's like I'm frozen in between the past and the future. I mean, there's no reason I couldn't go back.
Except for the panic attacks. And your mom, who obviously needs you. And your baby sister.
Right. Yeah, I guess that wasn't all that true either, was it?
Well, the brain works in mysterious ways.
Okay, thanks, Doc. It's an unhelpful thing to say and very vague. Dawson asks if he's just lying to himself, and Polly Perrette makes such a meal of Dr. Weir taking off her glasses so slowly before telling him that the brain isn't set up to cope with a loss like this that happened without warning. Along the way, a few lies are probably par for the course, and the problem is when you start convincing yourself the lies are true. Ooh. And after a commercial, there's some small talk between Dawson and Gail. Therapy was fine. Dr. Weir did not really have an opinion about USC, he says when Gail asks. But this is all preamble to a visit from their lawyer, whose name is Bresny. And behind a screen porch coffee table I now see was made out of a lobster trap or two.
Yep.
Bresny says Mitch's family trust was left to Gail and Dawson, but that Mitch never filed a codicil, adding Lily, meaning she technically would not have access to the funds. There are legal ways around that for now, but Bresny thinks they should check the house for any notes that Mitch might have left about it. And Gail briskly says they will and dismisses him. And obviously, I don't know about this. But if Gail is now the trustee, can't she just rewrite her will to include Lily?
I mean, I would think it would just all go to Gail.
Yeah.
When my grandmother died and for reasons left everything to my mother, but not to my cousin.
Okay.
For reasons that had nothing to do with my cousin. And my mom gave my cousin a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Done. Like, that was it. My mom was like, well, that's shitty. We shouldn't do it this way. Let's do it. Let's fix it. And they fixed it. I don't know how, right? Mm-hmm. But like, this is fixable. This is not a crisis. I understand they're grieving and yada, yada. But much like the Joey storyline, who cares?
Right. But the only way I can see that this would be Mitch's money, but not Gail's, when as far as we know, he barely ever worked in the time since
that
we've known
too.
Him. Is if he had family money, but we've like, there's never been a whiff of that. We've never seen any relatives from either side of the family. So like if there were antagonistic parents or siblings and this was going to be an issue, like we would have met them at the funeral probably. Like it would have been established before now. This just seems like contrivance for story's sake.
And if it all went to Dawson, Dawson can give some away. There would be probably tax issues, but like fixable.
Anyway, then we get a brief montage of Dawson rifling through papers in the house until Gail comes downstairs and says she thought he was going to stop looking. She reminds him that Bresny said this was just his technicality and then asks him straight out to stop because he is scaring her a little. And I thought this was going to turn into a conversation about like a relative of hers who had bipolar or something, because when Dawson asks if she thinks the codicil could be at the restaurant, he is talking very fast, but Dawson can tell immediately from her face that Gail found the codicil. It was tucked into the LOL Stephen King novel Mitch was reading, LOL.
I want to know which one, though.
I do, too. It was it. Dawson further guesses that it wasn't signed, and Gail also confirms that, because Mitch was a lot of things, but not detail-oriented, and that tracks.
Yeah, I do like this. It's the one thing about this storyline I liked, was because they spent the last couple episodes talking about how great Mitch was, and in this one they're like, actually
he he could have delegated this one to me and we would not be in this problem, but he didn't. Yeah. So
did you look for the codicil in the freezer behind the ice cream? Because could have been there.
Over coffee at Grams's house, Dawson tells Jen when she asks that he likes Dr. Weir, who wants him to come 3 times a week. Jen says that's good because it means Jen will get to see him more often. And then Dawson tells her about the will that both Gail and the lawyer say it's not a big deal. Clip 20.
Well, probably is.
It's not. It can't be.
I feel like you're, I don't know, like hanging onto the wrong thing here.
What do you mean?
Maybe your mom's right. You know, maybe the will isn't such a big deal. It's probably nothing. It's probably a red herring or something. A meaningless little detail sent to you by the universe to throw you off track of the real culprit.
And who is that?
I mean, he just made a mistake, Dawson.
I know, I'm not saying he's perfect.
I know, but you just seem... You're so afraid to get mad at him.
I'm not. What could... It's not going to change anything.
But it might change you. And call me crazy, but I think that is the point of therapy.
That was nice. That was good advice.
Yeah, I really like both of the scenes that they have together.
Yep. Unfortunately, it's leading somewhere. I wish it wasn't, but we'll get there. It's not in this episode. So then in session, and this is where I see that Dawson is sitting on the same couch that we used to have in Toronto around this time. And I was really excited and sent a picture to my sister because she lived with us then. She didn't care. Dawson tells Dr. Weir the worst part about the whole codicil thing is how unsurprised Gail seemed that Mitch hadn't signed it. And Dawson thinks maybe that's why he got so mad. The second extremely deliberate eyeglass removal of the episode as Dr. Weir makes Dawson admit he was mad. And he says he was at Mitch, but he can't be mad at Mitch right now. Dr. Weir says he can. Wasn't Mitch mad at Dawson the night he died? He had reasons for wanting Dawson to go back to USC, but maybe he was wrong. And if they could ask him, they'd probably learn those reasons were more about Mitch himself. And just because Mitch died doesn't mean he gets to win the argument. And choking up, Dawson says that when he remembers that night, he just feels furious. Dr. Weir says his feelings are okay. Now he just has to do what every 18-year-old has to, which is decide what to do with his own life. And if Dawson doesn't know, that's fine too. But Dr. Weir thinks he does. And Dawson looks horrified at the thought that he might, but hasn't actually like consciously figured it out. Maybe 3 times a week is not enough. Just wondering.
I did ask my partner, who is a therapist, mm-hmm. to watch this scene with me.
Yes.
And he also listens. Hi, honey. And he said, that wasn't so bad.
Okay, that's good.
But that end button where she's like, he's like, I don't know what I want. And she's like, I think you do. He was like, oh, that can really put a burden on the client. Maybe he doesn't know.
Right.
She doesn't know that he knows.
Yes. And then now it's a problem for this person who's seeing her for anxiety is going to think he has to solve. Yeah, I can see that. Good insight, Adam. Other Adam and you for relaying it.
Listeners, my partner's name is also Adam. It confuses people all the time.
It's Adam Driver. He's a therapist on the side. Just kidding. Sometime later, Dawson gets into his Jeep and starts it just in time to hear this on the radio, clip 21.
I've been letting you people make requests for long enough now.
Tonight I have a dedication of my own, and this one goes out to a very old friend who's seen me at my best and at my worst. And one night, out at Mercer Pond, got a pretty good view of me and nothing at all. Night swimming
deserves quiet. Song does not deserve that. But anyway, they were definitely short this week. And then we watched clips of Dawson and Jen separately listening to the song and remembering their skinny dipping night.
Yeah, well, they paid a lot of money for the song. They had make it worth it. I watched this on Hulu, even though you told me not to, because I am lazy. Mm-hmm. And it is not Night Swimming, unsurprisingly.
Oh.
And the sub song is not bad, but it is tonally so completely different. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very peppy.
Yeah.
And it just changes the entire thing. And I saw in our outline that it was Night Swimming. I was like, oh, that makes more sense.
Yeah, whoever does the subs, like, I just don't know if they must just find something that's based on length instead of, you know, BPM even.
Probably, yeah.
Anyway, our final scene, we're here. Dawson gets home and sees that Gail's still up waiting to give him his mail because he won a film festival in Hooksett, New Hampshire, which is crazy because he's never entered a film festival there. And it's extra crazy because I don't think there are any film festivals that only give out one prize such that you could say you won a whole ass film festival.
And like before it happened?
Right, exactly.
Like a prize by mail? Well, it was very confusing.
It is. Gail says that Mitch entered the festival for Dawson. He was bad with little details, but he always believed in Dawson, who then blurts that he's not going back to USC. And Gail just chirps, okay. Dawson is surprised, but Gail doesn't want him to return somewhere he doesn't like out of a misplaced desire to honor Mitch. And Gail says he would have come around anyway if he had lived. Dawson would have won him over. He ultimately knew it was Dawson's decision to make. And the two snuggle together on the couch and clip 22.
I miss him.
So do I.
He could be so.
I know. I know. He couldn't make a PB&J without getting jelly in the peanut butter jar.
The man refused to buy socks. He would just borrow mine. I loved him. You know?
Me too.
That was sweet.
That was sweet.
I like his scenes with her. When I was still on Instagram, at one point he posted when it was his birthday that ever since his mother died, Mary Margaret Hughes has sent him cookies on his birthday.
Aww.
And I was like, God damn, don't make me like him. But I thought that was really sweet. That he,
yeah.
Not only that she does it, but that he was like, this is a really special thing that she still does for me because like she has maternal feelings. And that was nice. And I also hope that they can continue saying the annoying things about Mitch because the canonization of him was a little much.
Yeah.
Well, let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Who would you say?
I'm going to say Jen for getting Dawson to go to therapy and being a good friend with a runner-up to the wardrobe department for all the sweaters.
They were some good sweaters.
Really good sweater episode.
It was. Yeah, I can't disagree. Jen has the most uncomplicated good stuff in this episode, other than her radio show, which sounds kind of annoying. Least valuable player. Danny, figure out your shit, man.
Oh, Professor Creepy Pants.
Oh, good one.
Don't figure out your shit. Just stop. Just stop and fire your decorator.
Yeah, good one. Next time, Dawson goes to the film festival in New Hampshire and Jen makes the sacrifice of going with him. See, very good friend. Joey is surprised to find out that the guys at a frat party are not there to get to know her as a person. And Pacey and Karen try being friends? They don't try that hard, but they do try. We actually do try very hard to make sure our visual aids are a useful supplement to the podcast. So look those up at againwithhispodcast.com. And hey, while you're there, why not check out our membership campaign and see if you have a couple of bucks per month to toss at the cause. We have exciting goals in the future, so help us unlock the exclusive sticker set and see what happens next. And we are also on Blue Sky, also again with thispodcast.com there. I'm Tara Ariano. I've been here with Adam Grossworth, who certainly knows you don't put drinks on the same table with archival papers. Adam, thank you so much for your service. Before you go, please tell our listeners again where they can find you.
I have a podcast called Muppeturgy about The Muppet Show and adjacent nonsense. You can find that at Muppeturgy.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find me at Adam807 on various socials.
Perfect. Thank you to Sarah D. Bunting, who will return in our next episode, we hope, touch wood. And to our producer, David T. Cole, who is detail-oriented and would never read a Stephen King novel. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time.
You want your bun toasted?
I have in my notes, in all caps, get your shoes off the table. I'm not even sure what it was about.